Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens.
My name is Kathleen McGowan.
And today our special guest is Carl Studner. Now, Carl is the beloved other half of our first ever Spirit Revolution interview in January of 2010, the beautiful Cynthia James. And it has taken a while before we get Carl on the air, but there is a very good reason for that, because Carl has just finished a book.
Carl is a renowned and extraordinary photographer who has taken photographs of some of the most interesting people of our time, including Paul McCartney, Elton John, the Dalai Lama, Marianne Williamson, Deepak Chopra, us, and a lot of other wonderful people. But why we have Carl on today is because he's just published a really extraordinary book called Click. Click, subtitled Choosing Love One Frame at a Time. And we really wanted to bring Carl on to talk about this book because I think that this book is truly special. When we talk about spirit revolutionaries, for those of you who have been following the show for the last almost 3 years that we've been on the air, we really try to bring people on who are making a difference in the world of spirit and this wonderful forward evolution that we have, this re-evolution that we have that's coming on as the 21st century really gets into gear and as we're all changing and growing and evolving. So we love to have guests on who are doing something truly unique and special and powerful in their own lives and on their own paths. And Carl is one of these people. And what he's done with this book is he has combined his lifetime of extraordinary work as a photographer with his equal lifetime of extraordinary work as a spiritual being and someone on the path. So welcome, Carl.
Oh, thank you both. It's great to be here.
You know, I was going to try to sum up the book, and what I decided that I don't usually do this, but I want to read the inside cover flap of your book because I don't know if you composed this or if someone with your publisher composed the synopsis, but I loved it. I think it's really good, and I think it gives people an idea of how unique this book is. And that goes back to you being a spirit revolutionary. You have a really unique way of taking this important information, which is all about self-reflection and love, and presenting it to people in a way that is truly special and truly unique through this concept of what happens through the single click of a camera. So I just wanted to read this inside flap for a second, and then I'm going to let you do the talking about how all this came to be.
Sure.
This inspiring and innovative book by acclaimed portrait photographer and transformational leader Carl Studner shows us how to create loving, purposeful, and heart-centered choices throughout each moment of our life experience. Studner uses the familiar example of having our picture taken as an ultimate barometer of where our attention is being placed in each moment of the click, that essential choice point representing every moment of our lives. Studner masterfully weaves a blend of his own personal stories with vulnerable, engaging essays from respected guest authors. Soulful photographs provide striking visuals that reinforce the book's message, and a variety of hands-on tools and daily practices empower us to choose love over fear throughout our day, instilling a life of freedom, inspired purpose, and full self-expression. Feeling freer to be ourselves and soar, we experience the side benefit of actually enjoying the process of having our picture taken, thus sharing photographs that truly reflect our beauty and our unique message to the world. So, Carl, how did you first decide you were going to combine your vocation as a photographer with everything that you have experienced through this amazing personal spiritual journey you've been on since you were a teenager?
That's a good question. Well, for years, because I've been doing photography as a business for over 33 years, and for many years, I was sure that my first book would naturally be a photography book. And that's where my attention was, and I had especially one book that I got completely to the point where it was camera-ready, practically, to print. And just was not finding the right publisher, and it still, to this date, has not been printed, and it's, I think it's an amazing, brilliant, unique book. And so I was sure that that would be the path I would go down. And about 3 years ago, a good friend of mine suggested to me, said, you need to write a book. I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, you need to tell your story. You need to write a book and then have it because you're getting out there and speaking more about being authentic in the world and being true to yourself. And so once he made that suggestion, it was as if this door opened, and all of a sudden, all this information started downloading. And that morning, I'm walking my dogs, and the first title that came to me, and I started cracking up, was in capital letters, was, "I love having my picture taken." And I was laughing. I'm walking the dogs and thinking, that's just so untrue for most people. But it was a good premise to start the idea of, well, what's wanting to come through here? And really part of the premise of the book, and it starts off talking about all about why is it that, especially in Western culture, that most people dread having their picture taken. And the more that I started looking at all of that, everything started unraveling, and I started recognizing, first, let's look at why there's a dysfunctional relationship that most people have, and sort of discover what are the roots of that, which I talk about, and then really put emphasis on, well, how can we transform the condition that most people have, which is one of dread and feeling self-conscious and all of the, you know, fill in the blanks, to empowering every moment of the click. And over the years, I've grown into the recognition, the more that I grow in, you know, within myself, and the more that I'm with every person that's a subject in front of me, how every single click is that choice point on where our attention is in that moment. And you can see from moment to moment, from frame to frame, when someone is present, when they're awake, when they're empowered, when they're alive, and when they're not. And so that served as a good reference point for really going into detail about that throughout the book, and every chapter weaving in not only tools for when you're in front of a camera, but more as a metaphor for every moment of our lives on where's our attention in each moment, and is it being placed in the present moment of really resting in the fullness of who we are, and we can feel that in each breath. We know when we're being true to ourselves, and we relax, and we're open, and we're genuine, and we're authentic, or are we caught up in some fear or separation?
Well, one of the things that I was really struck by with the title was that concept of click. At the moment that the camera says click, where are you? You know, are you here? Are you somewhere else? And are you being real, or are you posing for the camera? And I think that's a really, really powerful metaphor. And it's a reminder to stay in this moment. You know, that was for me that idea of click. It was like, oh, gosh, where am I in this particular moment? And I just thought it was a brilliant concept, and certainly – you know, you've been looking through that lens for a really long time with hundreds, maybe thousands of people that you have photographed over the years. So you have seen this in action, you know, for many, many decades. So I would guess that there are very few people who actually say, "I love having my picture taken."
Not too many, but there are some. And when it happens, I'm delightfully surprised. I was photographing this young woman. She's 17, a couple months ago. She's the daughter of some friends of ours. And she started off by saying, "Yeah, oh yeah, I love having my picture taken." And I was taking all the pictures of her, and she really did love it. She was, and it wasn't like she was putting on a false persona either. She was just being present each moment, putting on a different expression, and they all felt real, and it looked natural, and I thought, wow, she's one of very few that, you know, really are tapped into that.
Is it something of a generational thing? Is it something that we're getting more and more accustomed to it? Or is there something more to it than that? Is it hasn't really changed?
Well, if anything, Philip, I think that as a culture we're becoming more self-conscious about having our picture taken, but it's actually showing up more as a false image. People are getting more sophisticated at putting on sort of a false image, you know, an image of what, you know, whether it's a fashion model smile or how you think you should look, rather than just resting in each moment in a different aspect of the truth of who we are. And as an example, I was doing a shoot yesterday with my makeup artist. I was shooting she and her family, and he's probably 6 years old, her six-year-old son could not do a natural smile. I had to be really silly with them because he just kept putting on this posed, plastered-on smile that looked so ridiculous. I mean, it looked terrible. And I stopped finally, and I wanted to have a real conversation with them and just say, so I'd much rather have you not smile. You don't have to try and smile for me, okay? So if you don't feel like smiling, don't smile. And if you naturally smile because of how I'm being with you, and that provokes a natural sense of joy in smiling, then smile. And I think part of him got it, but my point is that already at that age, he's totally indoctrinated into how he thinks he should look in front of a camera.
So what do you think is the basis of the fear? Is it our inner critic? Is it that piece of us that does not want to look at ourselves? Does it vary from subject to subject? Or do you see a pattern through your years of photographing people, young, old, famous, normal, that there is a specific issue that comes up for all of them or many of them?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I think that there's a number of components at play, and one of them, which seems to be common with most people, is just simply the fact of growing up and having the condition around us where most people just say smile, or it used to be cheese. You know, so so you get in front of a camera, whether it's your parents, whether it's a friend, whoever, and someone says, okay, smile, or say cheese, or whatever they say. And that's it's a unrealistic expectation that you are going to go, oh, okay, I'll put on a natural smile because you're telling me to smile. It's like me saying to you, okay, Kathleen, be happy right now. Come on, be happy right now. You know, it's not realistic. And most people are used to that condition throughout the time that we're young, up until however old we are. We're used to that. So what I've noticed with most people, especially in candid situations, not when I'm taking pictures usually because I don't do that, but I notice it with myself too. If I'm in front of a camera and someone just says, okay, smile, there's a part of me that's a little regretful or resentful, you know, and I might not roll my eyes, but that's what I'm thinking. It's like, oh God, you know. And so there's this bit of resentment because someone's asking you to do something that's not authentic. Okay, so that's there with most people, and that's a condition that I talk about in the book. And I suggest to people, I encourage that, and this is something I'll say right now, that any time that you are in front of a camera, whether it's a friend or your partner or whomever, and they say smile or something else like that where they're wanting you to put on something and it's not authentic for you, then it's an opportunity to speak up and to say, that, you know, that's not realistic for me. You know, that's not authentic. You know, if you want me to smile, then you've got to participate with me and be a participant, co-create with me in getting me to smile if you want me to have a natural smile. Otherwise, I'm not going to smile because it's not real. So that's a component that I think is there with most people. And then there's the sociological aspect of it, you know, where we grow up, most of us grow up with television and with billboards and looking at ads at how we should look. So there's a degree of that with most people as well, where people are indoctrinated with the idea that they need to look a certain way or have, you know, their, you know, that we're comparing ourselves to something else, to advertising, to, you know, to whomever, you know, to a role model, whomever. And most of us don't learn in the home and certainly not in school. We don't learn to just honor who we are, honor our unique presence, our unique features, our unique way of expressing ourselves. And part of what Click is about also is with the reminder that every time that you're in front of a camera and every click, it's an opportunity to shift the way it's been and open to the opportunity that every single click can be an expression of a different aspect of who we are, and it can be a celebration. But it has to be, you have to feel safe, you have to feel trusting, and there's many components that go into that, which I talk about more in the book.
Well, I love that you said that every moment is an opportunity for celebration, because there's a place in the book where you talk about the somewhat negative terms that are used around photography, having your picture taken, capturing a moment, and how those actually can feel negative, like, you know, having something taken from you or being captured in this place, how those can be sort of unpleasant feelings. And in the book you say, if you have any other ideas, let me know. And I was thinking, I need to tell him that I think that it's a celebration. You're celebrating that moment of being in the present.
Mm-hmm. I'm writing that down. Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. And, it's no coincidence, I don't think, that we have those terms that, you know, that like capture and take. And it's interesting because in the 30s, maybe even 40s, maybe 20s, more people would say make a picture instead of take a picture, which is more accurate. You know, because it's creating, it's the act of creating. And I don't know where it got switched, but from make to take, but that could have been another, you know, sort of obscure subtitle for the book, from make to take.
Well, there's a really brilliant little piece that you do at the very beginning of the introduction that I think sets the tone for the spiritual piece of this book, or one of the spiritual pieces of this book. When you are asking, are you present in the moment or wanting to be somewhere else? But then you have this little section where you say click, 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 click. And after every click, there is a question. And I love, and I'll read some of them off for our listeners so that they have an idea of what I'm talking about. But I love this constant reminder that every moment is a choice between one of these things. You know, one of the things I say all the time is that fear and faith cannot exist at the same place at the same time, that you have to choose one. You can't be living in fear and living in faith at the same time. And I was thinking of that when I got to this piece in the introduction, because you're really saying that every moment is a choice. So, for example, you've got here, click, love or separation, click, honor or judgment, click, breathe or constrict, click, be present or mask, click, express or withdraw, click, shine or shrink. And I loved that. I thought it was such a great introduction to this is where we're going with this book. And I just wanted to know, where did the inspiration for that come, or is it just accumulation of everything that you have been working on?
Well, I think it is an accumulation. And something else that I'll address along those lines, because it's definitely along the spiritual lines, is that, you know, the more that I grow spiritually and awaken, I'd say, the more that I recognize how the inner and the outer light, from my perspective, are the same thing. So, as a photographer, if my focus for so much of my career and so much of my time since I was 16 picking up a camera has been becoming more fine-tuned, more attuned to the subtleties of light around me, which, you know, can make a picture from good to outstanding. If you look at some of Ansel Adams' pictures or some of the great pioneers of photography, you know, one of the qualities that makes their pictures go from, you know, a nice shot to outstanding is the exceptional lighting. And so I've just become more attuned throughout the years to becoming very sensitive and to the subtleties of light. And then the more that I grow spiritually, the more that I become more and more sensitive to the subtleties of our inner light, and how expressive that our inner light's coming through, or how we are holding it back. And speaking for myself, I know when I am, you know, feeling inspired, which is when the inner light is bold and strong and resonating and resounding outward, and I'm on fire with what it is that I love and my purpose, you know, or if I'm not feeling inspired, if I'm feeling frustrated or depressed for some reason, and my light, my inner light, is just not expressing, it's not ignited. So I just have become more and more aware, from my perspective, that the inner light and the outer light are really the same thing. That the outer light is just, you know, we our souls dance in a physical world, in a physical universe. So we talk of the outer light and looking at how the light around, like if someone's backlit and they're illumined in that way. You know, we see that with the physical eye. Yet when someone is inspired and truly they are, their lights are on from the inside, it's the same thing. And that's what, when I'm photographing, my attention is on bringing forth the inner light, which brings truly, I mean, I guess for those that read auras or feel or sense when they look at certain pictures of certain portraits of mine or other people that do the same thing, they can see the illumination of the being, of the soul that's coming forth. So I'm not sure if that fully answers your question.
It's a beautiful answer, and it actually reminds me of a very beautiful song written by someone who has been an inspiration for both of us on our spiritual paths, and that is George Harrison, who, of course, talked about the inner light and wrote a song called The Inner Light. And yeah. I know that he has been an inspiration for you on your path, and there is a beautiful, beautiful a piece in here about how he inspired you. And I'm going to ask you to talk about a couple of the personal stories here. And I actually was going to save the Beatles for the end here, but since we're talking about the inner light and we're talking about George, and he was such an important part of your journey, and also your connection with him was so much more about the spiritual aspect as opposed to, say, Paul, where you had a different experience, also an amazing, positive, exciting experience. I'd like you to go back and maybe tell our listeners a little bit about your connection to George Harrison and your experience spending a little bit of time drinking tea with him and talking about the importance of spiritual practice.
I'd love to. You know, as you brought this up, my heart just so went into this tender place because I know that we share this rich and deep appreciation for George. The Beatles were the biggest influence for me in growing up of anything, really. And their music, I could go on for hours about that, but they were a huge influence on me, and they represented joy and light and expression, being creative. And then as I grew older and into my teen years, I started really appreciating and relating to the Beatles' later, you know, work, and especially George's later songs and work that were really all about opening to the inner light and about our honoring our inner selves. And so in the early 90s, I had the opportunity, it was the opportunity, and I was very persistent to make it to Japan. He was photographing, I was photographing a 2 weeks of a 3-week tour that he did in Japan, and it was the first time that he had toured in 17 years, and it was the last time that he ever did a tour. And when I heard that he was going to be touring Japan with Eric Clapton and Clapton's band, everything in me just said, "You got to be there. You've got to be there." So I was doing a lot of work for Warner Brother Records, and I just worked it out to go sort of on, they weren't paying me. So I made my own way there, and they gave me passes, and one thing led to the next. And once I got there, I was given, you know, the opportunity to meet with George. And I walked into their suite, he and his wife Olivia's hotel suite, and he walked up to me, and he was just beaming. I looked to my right, and there was just this beaming figure of a person with a bright smile, his hand outstretched, and saying, "Hi, I'm George," and I'm thinking, "Yeah, of course." and we sit down, and the main thing that we discussed for the hour that I was with them, we had tea around this table, and it was in Osaka, Japan. And we primarily talked about spirituality and about meditation. And he was candidly sharing with me that he had just resumed a more devoted meditation practice. That he had become lax with it for a while, and during that time that he had become lax, his whole life just felt a lot less motivated and inspired. And once he resumed in a greater way, everything felt a lot more connected again. And I was sharing with him about my practice and what had deep meaning for me, and it was the whole experience was really out of my wildest dreams of what I would desire, the experience, kind of the experience I would desire to have with him. And it was a little unfortunate that at the very end of our being together, I was thinking, well, I have to acknowledge him as I would acknowledge anybody for contributions that they've made in my life. Because I knew he was sensitive to just wanting to be seen as an equal with someone else and not being put on a pedestal. So I thought I did a good job in the way I was just acknowledging how I just told him my story, similar to what I was saying to you, and what a huge influence that he had been in opening me up to the spiritual path, and how I just wish to thank him for that. And, he started to retreat a little bit because I think he interpreted it as me not seeing him as an equal, which was not my intention. But so a part of me felt a little disappointed about that, but in retrospect, I looked at it later and thought, well, no, I was being true to myself because I would want anyone to know whatever the acknowledgement was. I would want them to know what that is. And so, but overall, I mean, the whole experience there was so profound, and then especially it became even more profound after he passed, because I just saw what a fleeting period of time that was, and that window was there for me to share that with him and to share a little piece of our own lives with each other.
There is a beautiful photograph in the book of George, the one with him holding the rope, which I also happen to have on the wall of our home. It's one of my favorite pictures. When did you take that picture?
That was taken about a year before this tour in Hollywood, actually. It was at a Jeff Lynne video. He was a guest for this video, and I was covering that video for Warner Brothers, and George was there. So that was actually the first time that I met him, but that was more sort of in passing, and it wasn't any kind of in-depth connection. And, mm-hmm. But it was, the seed was planted then, and I truly believe that, which I talk about in the book as well, because within that same year, I photographed both George and Paul McCartney, and I truly believe from my experience that when we feel so inspired, where it's that level of inspired vision that feels like it could move mountains, that truly just about anything is possible as far as co-creating with the universe for things to come into place. Because what are the odds within the same year, totally independent of each other, that I would have the opportunity to spend time with both of these guys who were at the top of my list of people that had meaning for me and helped to shape my life?
Well, it's one of the things that I really love about this book, because you are very clear that you have been given some amazing opportunities and there has been great inspiration and support from spirit along the way, but also that you worked toward these things, that you really spent a lot of time visualizing and staying focused, that you tell the story about how you got the job photographing Paul McCartney, which I think is really powerful, because you talk about being in his manager's office and then going to meet his publicist, and how you are determined to stay in a very specific place in yourself during these meetings because you are committed to getting this job. Can you just give us a little bit of a recap of how that works for you? Because I think these are very important spiritual stories. You know, mm-hmm. It's not enough to just trust the law of attraction. You have to work with it.
Yes, and planting the seeds and nurturing them. Yeah, I'll start from going even further back, which I think I write about as well, where the seed was initially planted when I was running home with McCartney's first solo album in 1970, and I open it up and just love all the pictures, and the back shot is the infamous shot that Linda McCartney had taken of Paul and their baby, their first child together, Mary, and Mary's nestled in his coat, and they're both looking so presently at the camera, and it's such a soulful picture. And even at 14, something grabbed me about it, and I just wanted to know him. I wanted to be there, like, in that moment. And I believe the seed was planted then. And so fast forward to 1990, and, through various connections, through a dear friend of mine that knew someone that knew his manager, basically, I was ending up in London for a while, covering Eric Clapton shows in London. So I had a lot of time for the month I was there. And so this fellow served as an entree for introducing me to McCartney's manager. And I go to meet with him, and my attention was really just placed on being present, being authentic, showing up, being who I am, and really allowing myself to be genuinely interested in who this person is, discovering, honoring each other, really, showing up in a place of honoring each other, and then seeing if it might be a fit from there. And that's exactly how it was. I come into his manager's office, who was Richard Ogden, and just have the greatest time with him, spend at least an hour with him, and we're talking about different things, and I'm sharing with him pictures, and we both had a natural, authentic connection with each other, and he was very kind and interesting and interested, and it was like being with a good friend. And this is how I have found that it works when things are in the flow, is that he just said, oh, I want you to meet Paul's press agent, Robbie Montgomery. So while I'm there on the spot, he calls up Robbie and says, Robbie, there's this great photographer I think, Paul would really like, and I want you to meet him. Are you free right now? Robbie says, sure. So, boom. Next thing I know, I'm sitting in Robbie Montgomery's office, and same thing. It was the same atmosphere of connection and feeling at ease with him, at ease with each other, and just anchoring in, being real and being authentic and sharing from an enthusiastic, inspired place about what turns me on in my life, which happened to coincide with, photographing Paul. So had that great connection with Robbie. Sometime in the next few months, I get a call from him. I'm back in L.A. I get a call from him, and he says, well, I don't know if you're going to want to do this, because it's not, for an album cover, and it's not for a cover of anything, and we're not paying that much, but, Paul's going to be shooting a video at Skywalker Ranch, George Lucas's Skywalker Ranch, with Industrial Light and Magic for 3 days, and we just want to know if you want to be there to shoot stills and then take Paul aside at times and do portraits and publicity shots. And so of course I said, yeah, of course I want to do that. And I didn't care, they didn't have to pay me anything. So that was the opportunity to be with Paul, but not only with Paul, but with his whole family. Everybody except Stella was there. All his kids were there. And I got to witness, it was so sweet, because I got to witness not just being there, it was so much sweeter than if it had been for a day or for a part of a day on a tight schedule for a still shoot for an album cover or whatever, because I got to just be there and witness him and how he was with Linda and with his kids, and he was so loving and just so genuine with everybody there, just whistling. Someone on the crew said, when I was in high school, we played Blackbird for, and I won something, for an award. So spontaneously, Paul and this crew member start striking up, playing together and striking up this rendition of Blackbird. And I just got to witness him modeling, being true to his craft, and every single person that was a part of the Industrial Light and Magic team, and that's why they chose me as well. Everybody there, it was as if going back to the olden days of film, where everybody was just there to give the best that they could give, being real, being authentic, no sense of egos with anybody, including Paul, and everyone's just showing up, being a master at what they do and giving the best. And it was an exceptional experience of watching him bring that in. Like, his consciousness brings in and attracts that level of professionalism in the best of ways. And it couldn't have been finer. So I had times of being able to take him aside and do some very, present portraits ranging from soulful to silly, because he could just switch from moment to moment to just, having different expressions, and it was amazing.
Well, Paul is the quintessential Gemini, and I think that he has that amazing mercurial nature. You see it in his music too, right? That he can go from these really sort of deep, soulful songs to things that are actually a little bit silly. You know, he runs the whole gamut of who he can be, and it must have been an amazing thing to explore as a photographer and as an observer. But the other thing that I think that spiritually we can learn from watching this is there's a reason that someone at his level is in a place like Skywalker Ranch with other people at that level. You know, and you said this yourself just a minute ago, that there is something in their consciousness that is attracting this kind of professionalism. You know, and it goes back to that concept of physics and metaphysics, that like attracts like, and that it is people who are behaving in this deep and profound authenticity, and with fearlessness, I think, about just being who they are, that is extremely powerful and is, I think, part and parcel of their success.
Yes. Yeah, being authentic to who, every person there, they said, was so real with just showing up, not trying to be something other than they are, and honoring everybody equally, not putting him on a pedestal. Everybody was treated with honor and respect, and doing and serving a huge spiritual principle, being of the greatest of service with the gifts that they had to offer.
When you photographed very famous people, but I assume you've also filmed some of them as they were coming along, or people who are not that famous. Can you see the authenticity growing? Can you see where it sometimes fails? How are people different in private than on stage? Is really making sure that you're as authentic on stage as you are in private something which is very important in connecting with that audience?
Well, okay, there's so many dimensions to that question. Well, my experience with most people that are out in the public, whether you're a public speaker, whether you are an actor, whether you're a poet, whatever you're doing in front of an audience or a camera, that you have crafted and has become a masterful way of being able to do it. What I've learned through all the years of photographing people is that you can be a master at your craft when you are in the midst of doing it, and that can be truly masterful. Yet, if you're asking someone just to show up in front of a still camera and be authentic and be relaxed and to just rest into being themselves in every moment, that can be a very different request and very different kind of situation for people. So, like, case in point, years ago, another book that I am still not complete with, I was requesting, I met many years ago, I was requesting to photograph Jane Fonda for this book on inspiration. And I was talking with her and making this request. And she said no. She was quite clear. And she said, no, I just want you to know that having my still picture taken is one of the things that I dread the most in life. I just really don't like it. It's very uncomfortable for me. And that was a profound awakening or realization for me at that time, because that was, you know, that was probably over 20 years ago. And I thought, God, that's fascinating, because she's, and especially 20, 25 years ago, you know, she was much more in the public eye, and she's just a master at her craft. So I thought, well, of course she'd feel comfortable in front of a camera. But no, she didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, she wouldn't. She said it's one of the least comfortable things, because when you are acting, you're putting on a role. You know, if you're speaking in front of people, or whatever it is, you know, it's something that you learn a certain kind of persona in how to do that. And that doesn't necessarily mean that when you're in front of a camera that you're going to feel completely safe and relaxed in each moment, in just knowing what to do in each moment. That's one of the most, I think, unique things about still photography, as opposed to video or film. That in video and film, you are you're documenting, obviously, a whole series of moments that convey a feeling or an expression or a point. With still, every single moment, as I was saying before, is different. And it all depends upon where our consciousness is. And especially if you're going for pictures that are real, that are expressing who you are as opposed to a persona, then for many people, most people aren't used to taking each moment and resting in their authentic nature and what that feels like and what that looks like, and you know, what does it look like to be real in every single millisecond. Most people aren't used to that, especially in front of a camera. So that's why it is such a powerful tool for learning how to become more real in you know, in that kind of medium.
There are a number of amazing portraits in this book. I love the portrait of Marianne Williamson. It's so beautiful, and there's something that about it that you don't normally see with her, which is there's this sort of almost fragility to it. There's a vulnerability in this picture that I absolutely loved when I saw it. In fact, I had to look twice and say, is this Marianne Williamson? Because you always see her in these very strong, you know, power woman shots. And she's always, you know, gorgeous and radiant and who she is. But there's something in your portrait of her that captured this softness that I've never seen in a photograph of her that I thought was absolutely stunning. What was it like photographing her?
Well, this was it was an interesting shoot, because it was right before she was about no, actually it was after. It was after she spoke at Mile High Church. You know, most people wouldn't want to do that after they speak for, you know, and they're on stage for 2 hours and then probably an hour book sign or whatever. But that's when she wanted to do it. And I only had about 20 minutes to half hour with her, so it was at a quick pace, yet I was very aware that she felt tired. I was aware energetically of everything, so I was being extremely sensitive, which I generally am. But some situations like this one, where it's just more tender for more circumstantial reasons, you know. So I was being very, very sensitive to her needs, and I was doing, you know, it was for a magazine cover, and I was doing a lot of traditional shots, and then that shot you're referring to, that shot was more for me, you know, mm-hmm. and some pictures I take more for, because they're calling me because of something that I see or feel within somebody, as opposed to it being a, quote, commercial picture. And those are usually the ones that I'm the most drawn to, and that oftentimes, you know, others are really drawn to because of the reason that you said, because there's something deeper that's coming through that's not just a, more of a traditional kind of smile or a traditional pose. And she wasn't really sure about that picture when I sent it to her. And I really was encouraging her to see, because she thought that it might look too serious, or can't remember the words that she used, but she wasn't really 100% sure about it because it was so different. And but I just stuck with what I felt, and I don't think it's ever been used for anything commercially for the reasons that it's not commercial.
No, it's not. It's real, and it's very, very relatable, which is what when I look at that, I see, okay, this is someone I could sit down with in my kitchen and have a real conversation with. You know, you can see that she's tired, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in the most amazing human way, that this is a woman who has a lot going on, and she is doing a lot, and you can see it in this shot, but everything about it, I think, is beautiful. But now,
there's a depth, you know. I just think that there's a certain level of depth to it, and there are certain images that I take, and sometimes there's two others in there that I specifically took that I call vision inspired or inner vision images that have come to me in a meditation or in the stillness. And this one wasn't. I mean, this one I just took because I saw it when I was shooting and I felt it. But the shot of Michael Beckwith that's in the book and of Deepak Chopra, both of those were inner vision images that came to me truly vividly in a meditation, different meditations. And every time that happens, every single time that happens, the image manifests identical to what the inner vision had shown me.
Amazing.
Every single time. It's become undeniable, and I can't deny it. So if I get a clear inner vision, I have to act on it. And so far everybody eventually has said yes. So that's also been a sign that it's meant to be, because you know, the shot with Deepak where he's holding this candle and he looks, and the vision was that he's a messenger of light, and that's what was coming through. And it took about 3 years before his assistant finally worked it out and they agreed for me to do it. But that's an amazing process, speaking on the spiritual level too, because when I get these inner visions, they're clearly guided from the inner realms, and as long as I listen and I trust and I honor and I follow through with the taking necessary steps, then so far the track record has been impeccable, with people eventually saying yes and they come out, you know, identical.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about real quick, as we're getting low on time, is you called me or wrote to me about just almost 2 years ago, I think, to tell me you were working on this book, and you asked me to contribute to it, and you asked a number of other authors to contribute, and as a result, there are the book also contains some short personal stories from a number of people, and I was really honored to contribute to this book. How did you first come up with the idea of bringing people like me and other authors and spiritual teachers to come in and participate in this book and talk about photography? Where did that idea come from?
Well, first off, I just want to thank you again publicly on air for saying yes, because I just, you know, I'm just such a fan of your writing and your soul, and how that comes through your craft, and I do really feel like your contribution just added a whole other dimension, and I'm so grateful for that. And how that idea came through was how the whole book came through, which was really in the silence. Everything, well, maybe not every single little detail, but certainly the larger details and ideas and concepts for the book all came through in my meditations or when I was just still. And that was one of them, was just envisioning a series of short stories from different authors that were able to give their experience related to being in front of a camera or looking at pictures of themselves or something related to that, because it's one thing for me to talk about it and, you know, be the spokesperson for this theme, but I think it brings in more dimensions when you've got other people. In this case, I believe it's eight or nine short stories from different people that are all sharing their perspective. I think it just helps to bring in a greater diversity of perspective on this whole topic.
Well, it certainly adds a dimension to the book, and like I said, it was an honor for me to be a part of it. But I have to ask you about the picture on page 8. Now, there are a lot of really stunning portraits in this book, but for me, I think one of the most special might actually be your first, and it is this self-portrait that you do in the bathroom mirror. I think you're probably about 16. It's absolutely such a beautiful picture, but there's so much purpose in it. And my question for you is, did you know at the moment that you were taking this picture that this is where your life was going?
Wow, what a great question, Kathleen. I knew when I was taking that picture, I knew that photography was such a radiant contribution to my life, and that it was such already at that time that it was such a profound, opportune way for me to express what I saw, what my gifts were, and who I saw that I was, and that's what I knew, and I think there was something in me now that I've never thought about that question, so I'm having to reflect on it while you're asking me. I think there was something in me as I was taking that had some level of self-consciousness, which I redefine self-consciousness in the book, I mean, in a good way, being conscious of myself, conscious of who I am and how I wish to show up and be seen in that moment with the camera, because, you know, it's in front of a mirror and I'm seeing what I look like, and it's that choice point. So I got to make that choice of how do I want to be seen at 16 in that moment. And that, you know, that I'm sure was planting the seeds for everything that grew from there.
Well, and you certainly carry that theme throughout the book about planting the seeds. One of the things I want to mention is one of the reasons I love this book is that it is so multidimensional. It has stories of your journey photographing people like Paul McCartney and Elton John and the Dalai Lama, who we haven't even had a chance to talk about, but the Dalai Lama picture is so real and so natural and had to have been one of the highlights of your career, taking photographs of the Dalai Lama. But there's also spiritual practice in this book. There are some very practical elements in this book where you challenge people, try this, take this idea and into your own life and see where it leads you. And I just wanted to give you, we only have about another minute, but I just wanted to give you a minute to talk about these practices that you put into play in the book, because it really just rounds the whole thing out for me. It really makes it a very complete work.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I wanted to offer tools because I feel like, you know, we can talk forever about spiritual principle and lessons and things that we've learned, and yet having tools that we can take away and actually use to assist us day to day with returning to the authentic truth of who we are in each moment, with each breath, with each thought. So yes, so throughout the book are woven various tools and practices that I encourage people to try on for a week or for a month or what have you. And if it works for you, then make it part of it, put it in your tool chest, you know, to use in your daily life.
Because we're running out of time here, I'm going to say there are a number of stories in this book. We could do 2 hours with this book. We could do 3 hours. We could do 6 hours with this book and not cover everything that I would want to talk about because it is so full and so multidimensional. So what I'm going to say to people is get this book and enjoy it. It's one of those wonderful pleasures. It's the book that on a Sunday afternoon you want to, you know, want to lie, just lie down on the couch and you want to curl up beside the fire and you just want to read it and experience it and enjoy it. But I want to challenge people to read some of these stories and really think about them. And one of the stories, and we don't have time to talk about it, so I'm just going to tell people, buy the book and read the story about what happens to Carl in Mexico. That story of what happens to you when you are walking back across the border to get to your car one night in Mexico, I thought was absolutely profound, and it has really made me stop and think. And I challenge my listeners to read this book and pay attention to that story about what happens to Carl in Mexico. I promise you, it'll be profound for you.
Well, and if you want to read the book, you can go to Amazon, but you can also go to a specific landing page which Carl has created, which is clickchoosinglove.com. Click Choosing Love is also the title and the subtitle of the book. If you want to listen to this interview again, you can do so in a number of ways. Go to bbsradio.com, to the archives, go to thespiritrevolution.com, and go to iTunes. On the latter, you will get several interviews, and on iTunes, almost 50 or so of our interviews, which we've done over the almost 3 years which have gone through. Carl, thank you very much for being our special guest today. And from the both of us, until the next time,
the truth against the world.
I love you both. Thank you.